Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
It's Monday.
It's August 24th.
And the word of the day is epigon, meaning a less distinguished follower or imitator of someone, especially an artist or philosopher. Use in a sentence. You'll notice I'm doing the word of the day this week because Heath isn't here. Yep, he gone.
Podcast listener, I showed up to this recording dressed entirely like Eponine from Les Mis because I misread that word, and I'm as disappointed as the rest of you. And I'm also Eli Posnick.
I'm Michael Marshall, and broadcasting delayed from America's far center and Britain's scorched north, we are the Skeptocrats.
On this week's episode, the country checks the couch cushions for $40 trillion.
We'll find out just how much money there is in free speech.
And the Mormons will let go of some of the money they stole. But first, the rest of the intro music.
Joining me for headlines tonight is my fellow skeptic rat, Eli Bosnick. Guys, don't adjust your iPods and your Zooms. I'm hosting this week. It's just that you guys have finally realized that things are just better when the British are in charge. So yeah, I'm going to make some changes. I'm going to be putting so many U's throughout the script. I'm going to switch some Z's for some S's. I'm going to steal all the best jokes and put them in our museums. You know, standard British stuff. So Eli, given the new regime, what else are you going to admit is just better when Brits do it?
I mean, pretty much everything but food and teeth, Martian. I'm brave enough to say it. Everything but food and teeth. And on this podcast, also food and teeth, because I'm a vegan with a gold tooth. Like a pirate. All right. In our lead story tonight, there are numbers large enough that it is genuinely difficult for the human brain to process them as real. 1 million. 1 billion. The number of prank websites I own about Marsh. But then there's $40 trillion. Specifically, $40 trillion, which is the number the U.S. federal debt hit this week for the first time in history. Significantly before analysts thought it would, and which I want you to understand represents the complete and total failure of every economic philosophy any of us has ever been sold under capitalism.
Yeah. And an even quicker failure than the analysts were expecting, apparently. That is American exceptionalism right there. USA, USA, USA.
Wait, let me open this banner that says "The America is broke." There it is.
Yeah, we did it. Mission accomplished. You got it secondhand. It was going cheap. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I know when I say 40 trillion, that just feels like number words, especially when it comes to national debt. So let me try to contextualize this for you. If our country spent $1 million every single day since the birth of Jesus Christ, not 1 million a year, 1 million a day, We would have spent about $750 billion by now. You need to run that clock for 54,000 years to reach our debt of $40 trillion. And $1 million a day since the dinosaurs went extinct, we would still be short. That's how much debt you and me are in as a country.
Yeah, that's what debt you guys are in. I think we're only at $3 billion. We're fine. To put it another way, I genuinely did a bit of maths and a bit of looking up on this. The high-end price of a 6-inch Subway sandwich is about like $7.50, $7.50, something in that kind of region, apparently. So if you bought a 6-inch sub every single day since the Big Bang, you still wouldn't have hit $40 trillion. Unless you also shelled out for the fancy cheese as a topping.
Now, if you go for mozzarella, you just about make it.
Just about make it.
Now, you might be thinking to yourself, okay, obviously that's a big number, but maybe all of the countries are an octomajillion numbers in debt. I don't fucking know. Well, here's how bad that is nationally speaking. The debt has doubled since 2017. You know, when Trump got first elected.
Okay, but for 4 years of that, that was under Biden. So how can we be sure that the debt isn't mostly just buying eggs?
Yeah, we are not sure of that. We are not, as a nation and as a people. And just the interest on what we owe now costs the government more than $1 trillion a year. That's the second largest expense in the entire federal budget, behind only Social Security. We spend more on interest payments than we do on the military, Medicaid, or, and I can't emphasize this enough, anything else. $1 trillion a year for the privilege of having borrowed money. And like College Eli with a maxed out credit card, we are borrowing even more to pay our interest, in case you're wondering.
Well, this is what I was wondering. Has America tried the trick where you just take out a new credit card to pay off the debt on the old credit card? Like, America could just take over a new country and then use its resources to pay off some of the national debt. Wait, no, that has been American military policy since, I think, 2001.
Yeah. And we're bad at it. We got to take over better, richer countries. We're not doing the right ones, I guess. But don't worry. Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, announced a fix this week. He said that the Department of Treasury would expand its bond buyback program. That's right, everybody. Bonds. That thing your grandma got you when you were 11 that she's pretty sure would be worth something someday. She was wrong, by the way. But then Scotty B made his announcement and yields did fall for a day, literally. That's what $40 trillion buys you, a Tuesday afternoon where the numbers looked slightly better and then they didn't.
Yeah. And has anybody checked on Polymarket to see if any large bets were placed on how the economy looked that Tuesday afternoon? Or maybe bets from the Washington IP address, something like that? At this point, insider trading might be your country's only way out of the fiscal hole that you found yourself in.
Can we bet against ourselves? Oh, no, that's also been our policy since 2000. Stupid. And look, the NPR article I read about this ended with a quote about how both parties helped bring us here. And that's technically true in the same way that both the arsonist and the person who forgets to buy a fire extinguisher share responsibility for the house being on fire, right? The debt doubled under a party that passed a $1.9 trillion tax cut in 2017 and then passed the one big beautiful bill on top of that tax cut, and whose operating theory for 50 years has been that the way to reduce debts is to give money to people who already have the most of it and then just wait for them to give it back, I guess.
Yeah.
So yes, both parties are responsible in the way that a drunk driver and the baby in the car seat in the back are both involved in the accident. And speaking of money, it's time to earn a little with a word from this week's first sponsor, Quince.
All right, Eli, are you ready to grab some lunch?
Yeah, I really hope they have AC in there.
I see, yeah. Are you wearing a bunch of shirts there?
I sure am, Marsh. You never know what the look is for a restaurant. Maybe it's fancy, maybe it's casual. Maybe the waiter won't get my Dungeon Crawler Carl references on my first t-shirt. You gotta be prepared.
I see, okay. Well, Eli, if you want to look excellent no matter what, you should try Quince.
What is Quince?
Quince specializes in everyday staples that work harder, like their ultra-soft organic cotton tees and premium Mongolian cashmere sweaters. They're versatile, timeless, and transition seamlessly from a casual workday to dinner out.
Well, that sounds great.
It is. Plus, everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They work directly with ethical factories and they cut out the middleman. So you're paying for high quality, not brand markup.
It's true. Quince sent me a Mongolian cashmere sweater to try. It's warm and cozy and it looks fantastic. That's why I, Eli Bosnick, personally endorse Quince.
Upgrade your everyday. Download the Quince app for app exclusive offers or go to quince.com/skepticrat. Get free shipping on your order and 365-day returns now available in Canada and in the UK too. That's quince.com/skepticrat.
All right, Marsh, thanks. Let me go change out of these t-shirts then.
Yeah, I'd say you can leave on everything sweat-stained. Leave that at home.
Oh, I'm going to need a while then.
Sure. And we're back. And next up in headlines, in the Fleece and Leech Union news.
Fantastic!
There are few things more satisfying than watching objectively bad people get hauled under the magnifying glass, which is why it's been so great to see the green shoots of accountability springing up this week for Lord Toby Young's Free Speech Union. Now, I know what you're thinking. Hey, Marsh, what can you possibly have against free speech, against the Free Speech Union? Are you some kind of monster? How can you possibly be against free speech? Who are you going to go after next? The Blowjobs and Cupcakes Collective?
Yeah, and to that he says, not enough senior citizens with cancer. That's not his target.
I've always said that. Well, to all of that, I'd answer, first of all, rude. I'm a guest here on the Skepticrat. I will not be spoken to that way, freely or otherwise. But secondly, that is exactly how the Free Speech Union want you to react. They call themselves the Free Speech Union, so you would mistakenly assume that they'd be mainly concerned with freedom of speech and therefore be above criticism.
Okay, but isn't the charity you work for literally called the Good Thinking Society, Marsh?
That's neither here nor there. That is okay. Neither here nor there.
I was just checking in.
The point is, while the Free Speech Union, they set up in 2020 with the publicly stated goal of being defenders of free speech, regardless of what you're saying or what beliefs and ideologies you espouse, in actuality, outside of a handful of outlier cases, the majority of the people they defended have been the lady who called for people to burn asylum seekers in their beds, or the Christian lady who got arrested for intimidating people in an abortion clinic.
I remember
or
her.
The teacher that got sacked for bullying a trans kid, or the other teacher that got sacked for bullying a trans kid, or the former comedy writer who got arrested for encouraging the assault of trans people. And according to Toby Young himself, the vast majority of the 6,000 cases that they've defended since 2020 have been around their gender-critical beliefs.
Yes, thank you. I mean, look, if I may speak to the trans community, and there's nobody better suited than I, yes, you are being murdered and your rights are under attack, but sometimes when you ask for them not to be, you're like shitty on Blue Sky about it. So...
Yeah. Or like slightly sarcastic, and that's just a downer to everyone. So, you know, do better.
Snippy.
Yeah.
Snippy.
So, yeah, Lord Young and the people in his close network, they'll go all in on defending your right to say whatever bigoted things they happen to agree with. And most recently, that's involved funding the legal case of Nathan Koffnes, who sued Cambridge University. You might remember him from last week. Cambridge cut ties with Koffnes after he wrote about how there should be no black people in elite education because black people are only really suited to positions in sports and entertainment. Koffnes then used that keen, impartial eye to root out plagiarism in the thesis of the black academic Jason Arday, starting a media pylon that was escalated by Toby Young's other project, The Daily Skeptic, which, despite its name, is an anti-vax, climate denialist, anti-woke blog.
Yeah, I mean, maybe if every media outlet possible wrote a think piece about the open racist working at Cambridge instead of a black guy who padded his special skills, that guy wouldn't be dead.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And as I said last episode, despite Arday being far from the only academic to have ever committed plagiarism, and despite academic plagiarism only being like a sackable offense rather than a criminal offense, that media pylon spread to the national media with literally hundreds of articles. It was like 200 articles after he resigned, and it was especially in the right-wing press of Toby Young and his peers. And as a result of this incessant hounding, Jason Arday took his own life last week. And no matter how you look at it, a huge share of the responsibility for that lies with the press and with the self-professed eugenicist, Koffnes.
Okay, but at least the process of Cambridge University remains unimpingeable, right? Like, that's what's important, right? The theses at Cambridge University are all great and awesome, and no one needs to check
them. They're all excellent. Nobody ever check on that. Exactly. And side note on Nathan Kofless, it turns out while he was working at Cambridge, he was also being paid by the right-wing magazine Aporia, which is a rebranding of the eugenicist organization, the Pioneer Fund. That's the organization that funded the Bell Curve by Charles Murray.
Oh!
Yeah. And Kofless's editor at Aporia is a guy called Noah Carl, who is also the co-director of The Daily Skeptic with Toby Young. But I'm sure that close working relationship in no way influences which cases Toby Young's free speech union takes on or champions. It's just a total coincidence that the FSU spent time and money defending Kofless and amplifying his attacks on Jason Arde across their websites, the Daily Skeptic's website, and the various right-wing magazines that Toby Young and their board write for, including Aporia and The Spectator and Quillette and Unheard.
Okay, but the good news is they spell skeptic S-C-E-P-T-I-C. So they're kind of doing a filtering in, when it comes to the publication, right? Like no one who ends up with them was aiming for you. And that's nice, right?
That would be nice, but their literal trading business name is Skeptics Limited, S-K-E-P-T-I-C-S.
No!
And their podcast is called The Skeptic Podcast, the name of my skeptic podcast. So yeah, that is not ideal.
If you don't see Mike when you turn on the podcast, you've gone the wrong direction.
Quillette, by the way, happens to be heavily funded by Peter Thiel, as is a guy called James Orr, who's a professor at the University of Cambridge. Peter Thiel gave him £5 million to promote right-wing values among Cambridge students. And that included, in 2021, inviting Charles Murray of the Bell Curve to speak about the Bell Curve at the University of Cambridge. So this also raises questions about how someone as shoddily qualified as Nathan Kofless is got a research position at Cambridge in the first place. But, you know, it's not DEI when it's white eugenicists getting jobs that they're wholly unqualified for.
Also, Marsh, I just want to be careful here. Are you saying a website that sports headlines like how Canada jumped the rails on gender-affirming care and J.K. Rowling versus Amnesty isn't on the up and up? Because those folks at Quillette seem legit. They're against Amnesty, by the way. I guess you're wondering whose side they're on between J.K. Rowling.
They are very much against Amnesty International, 100%.
Those guys can be real jerks. Let me just say, okay?
Again, it's tone. It's in the tone. Like, it's you want human rights, but don't be such a Debbie Downer about it.
Sometimes you're doing a thing and they're mean about it. I get it, J.K. Rowling.
So throughout all of this, Toby Young and the Free Speech Union have maintained that, you know, their claims that they are politically unbiased. But those claims are fooling nobody, especially given that Toby Young met with the Trump administration to brief Trump and his team on how to lobby against the UK government. And he briefed JD Vance specifically to attack the UK's free speech record. And he got that briefing to JD Vance via his good friend, James Orr, the guy at Cambridge being funded by Peter Thiel.
These relationships are so incestuous. I'm surprised they aren't part of the royal family at this point.
And look, I'm sure this is all just one big coincidence. And, you know, this is definitely not the kind of quid pro quo that would upset charity regulators. But after that briefing happened, the Trump government announced it was giving the Free Speech Union's international arm $5 million.
Okay, well, someone has to help the Harry Potter lady sue Amnesty International, Marsh. She needs help.
Yeah, she needs to spend help. Her own money on that. Come on, don't be ridiculous.
She's running out of Cho Chang money.
So yeah, there are some questions to answer there, and they're not the only ones, because we also heard this week that people are starting to wonder where all the money from the Free Speech Union is actually going.
Ooh.
Yeah, well, case in point, they crowdfunded £250,000 to cover the legal fees of the famous Irish transphobe Graham Linehan after he got arrested at an airport. But the police settled Linehan's case out of court, so the legal fees would have been a fraction of that £250,000. So where'd the rest of the money go? In another case, £60,000 was raised to defend a retired police officer who was arrested for a social media post, except he won his case, and we found out that his lawyers had been representing him pro bono.
Okay, well, it's called fundraising, not fund using, Marsh. You didn't say.
Well, the thing about that pro bono case, the FSU didn't exactly go out of their way to make the pro bono element of it known. They even said in one email, quote, Julian Folk, the name of the police officer, can be quietly sidelined. At some point, we'll need to explain what we did with all the money raised for a case that was done pro bono. And then a whistleblower who left the organization, he put it, quote, internally, it was just a big joke to everybody. Ha ha, we raised all that money. Let's hope no one ever finds out about it.
Okay, to be fair, that was also my original plan for Vulgarity for Charity, so
yeah, and that would have been still more ethical than what you ended up going with in the
end. Thank you!
So, yeah, fair.
My stuff would have been probably not a felony. It would have been a felony.
It would have been maybe less of a felony. It might have been like misdemeanor at most.
Same amount of felony, probably. I don't want to make claims, okay?
Now, in their defense to all of this, the FSU have claimed that all the money from their crowdfunding is ring-fenced for cases, and money not used on one case just goes to another case. And they point out that they've represented people in 46 separate cases in the past year alone, and not all of them get a lot of donations. But that, to me, only introduces other questions, because they claim to have fought more than 6,000 cases since 2020, but apparently only 46 in the last year? So either they are a hell of a lot less busy than they used to be, or there's something in their numbers that's still not adding up.
Huh.
So either way, yeah, there are way more questions still to ask. And thankfully, we have a free press with the freedom of speech to be able to ask them.
Well, they're pretty busy right now checking the resumes of everyone with darker skin, but well, they'll get to it. And in OK Groomer news. For years, the operating political strategy of the Florida Republican Party has been, in its simplest form, accuse your opponents of doing the thing that you are doing. Teachers are groomers, drag queens are predators, the LGBTQ community is a threat to your children.
Right. They even had Elon Musk tell you that an unelected special interest group was out there defrauding the American taxpayer.
Exactly.
So exactly.
Yeah. And their legislation has formalized those attacks. The Don't Say Gay bill, book bans, bathroom bills, restrictions on what teachers can discuss about gender and sexuality. And at the center of all of it, as Ron DeSantis' single most loyal ally in the Florida State House, stood Mike Caruso.
Yeah, a man whose look answers the question, what would a charismatic televangelist do if they had zero charisma?
Exactly, yes. Caruso voted for the Don't Say Gay bill. He voted for restrictive abortion regulation. He campaigned with DeSantis in Iowa in sub-zero weather. When DeSantis clashed with his own House Republicans, Caruso cast the lone Republican vote to stand with the governor. And in 2023, he voted for the death penalty for adults convicted of sexually battering children under 12. Because Mike Caruso cares about children and he'll do anything to protect them. Well, on Tuesday, Mike Caruso was arrested on 5 felony counts: kidnapping, lewd and lascivious molestation, lewd and lascivious exhibition, luring and enticing a child, and child abuse causing mental injury. And the victim is his grandson.
Huh. Maybe when he voted to stop other people assaulting kids, he thought he was calling dibs. Could it be that?
That's possible. Certainly possible. The child's father discovered the abuse in October of 2025 when he saw his son behaving in a sexualized way with his younger brother. When the father confronted Caruso, Caruso denied everything and then said, quote, if you tell anyone, I will get arrested. I will just go away, end quote. He offered to never return to the country if the family kept it private. On a call recorded later at the request of law enforcement, Caruso said, quote, if you report this to the authorities, there won't be any left of me left. I can tell you that.
Okay, did he think that would make the father think twice about reporting him, though? Like, if you tell people I've been doing this, they'll make me stop. Like, yeah, man, that's the kind of the point of telling them. That's what he's looking to do. What was he saying? Like, look, before you finish dialing 911, consider this. If you report me, I will suffer the consequences of my actions. And the police are already at the door. That was fast. Curse living in a white Republican neighborhood. They get here so quick.
Yeah, yeah. And this is also not the first time Caruso's been accused of abuse, or the second time. His ex-wife accused him of sexually assaulting a child in 2012 divorce filings. His daughter has also accused him of inappropriate behavior, including sexual battery. Caruso was also, on the day of his arrest, running unopposed in the Republican primary for his own seat.
Okay, and presumably he was running on his proven record of dogged perseverance and never allowing setbacks to get in the way of achieving his goals. You know, transferable skills is what
exactly,
I'm talking about here.
Exactly, yes. And look, we spent a long time on this show documenting the specific cruelty of using groomer as a political weapon against LGBTQ people and their allies, right? The argument was always that protecting children was so urgent, so sacred, so non-negotiable that no accusation was too extreme, no legislation could be too invasive. And what we keep finding every single time is that the people who are loudest about protecting children from an imaginary threat are often the people you most need to protect children from. But the good news is this, podcast listener, Mike Caruso is in the Orange County Jail right now, held without bail, charged under the law that he voted for doing the thing he spent his career accusing other people of being. And he might face the death penalty. And I know, the death penalty is bad. It's applied unfairly. It's barbaric. It represents everything the state should not be. But I'm just saying, maybe for this case, we make an exception, okay? In the name of comedic irony, I think we should do one state murder.
Yeah, exactly. Anyone who votes in the death penalty should be amongst the cohort that the death penalty could only apply to. That's the only way. Like, you want the death penalty, cool, you're in. Everyone else can opt out. Like organ donating, you know, it's an opt-in, opt-out kind of system.
Exactly. You should be able to kill people who are organ donors. Wait, what did you say? I'm sorry, I was reading Quillette magazine on my screen. And I missed it. They're making some great points, guys. Check us out. It's awesome.
And next up in headlines in the Count and the Cunt news. Look,
it's
your
okay. He's English. He's English. Yes, he's English. You can't be mad. He's English.
It's part of our normal everyday. You can't not get away. Anyway, the political
they
saga.
They call children it.
It is.
They play a game. It's a game. That's duck, duck, goose for them. It's duck, duck, cunt. I shouldn't have said it. Now I'm in trouble.
Yeah, it's not your word to say. Keep that word out of your mouth.
I'm so sorry.
Exactly. Exactly. The political duck, saga you. Of... The political saga of the summer is finally over here in the UK after Nigel Farage stormed to victory in the Clacton-on-Sea by-election with a majority of more than 12,000 votes over the second-placed candidate, which ordinarily, that would be an impressive feat if he hadn't called the election solely in order to dodge a parliamentary investigation into how his political career has been financed and if his main opposition hadn't been a garbage can wearing superhero from space.
Sorry, Marsh. I was just lost in the pleasant fantasy of getting to vote for a garbage can. You were saying something about for now?
Yeah. Well, as a quick refresher, Farage triggered this election after it was revealed that he'd taken millions of pounds in undeclared donations from sources that were questionable at best and money laundering at worst. And it's more likely to be the worst of those. And then when he was asked about the money, his story changed so often. It was like a toddler trying to explain to you what happened to that cookie that they weren't supposed to eat.
Yeah.
And yeah, when it became clear that the story was not going away, he resigned from office, saying that the people of Clacton would be his judge, as long as he didn't have to like provide them any information that might lead them to make an informed judgment, obviously.
Yeah, only God can judge me because he's a senior citizen who mostly gets his news from Facebook and the Sun.
Well, his plan backfired when every other major party just refused to stand a candidate in the ensuing special election, meaning that Farage's only electoral opposition was fringe candidates or joke candidates, or the very real and very serious political figure Count Binface of the Recyclon race from Sigma 9 in space. And it's hard, it's really hard to run as the anti-establishment figure when your primary opponent is a man with a bin for a head. Although, to be fair, he is a count, and you don't get much more elite than the landed gentry.
Yeah, he shows up to the fox hunt with a duck hunt gun and a net. He does not get in.
Yeah. Alongside Farage, N, and Binface, C, the ballot paper listed 33 other candidates, including such obviously ridiculous figures
as... Multi-party system. Hell yeah, baby.
It's amazing. So obviously ridiculous figures such as Nick the Incredible Flying Brick, Baron Von Thunderclap, Woke Trump Kazi, Marcus White from the Everyone is God party, and Lawrence Fox. And the ballot paper listed so many candidates. It genuinely, the ballot paper was 90 centimeters long, or, you know, roughly half a me in length. And in the end, when the polls closed last Thursday, 22,239 Clactonites voted for Nigel Farage, which was a full 1,000 more than who voted for him in the 2024 election. But that might sound like a win, but you got to bear in mind, there were other parties standing in 2024, and there weren't this time. This time, it was him in the bin, and 9,455 people opted for the bin.
Yeah.
And that, 9,500, that's a record haul for a novelty candidate. Bin Face got almost 27% of the vote share, despite having a policy platform that prominently included the relocation of the hand dryer in the men's room of a pub 100 miles away.
Okay, to be fair, if you check the website, it's in a shitty spot. We should hear this guy out. He's making good points.
It's an excellent point. You're absolutely right.
You open the door and you hit the person using it. It's insane. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Fucking insane.
Now, even worse for Farage, the number of people who decided to sit the election out altogether was 44,000, which is twice as many as voted for him. So far from being the triumphant exoneration by the people of his constituency, he rode back into office on a resounding meh.
Okay, England, don't get me wrong. I love your wacky bits. I'm a huge fan. But maybe you just oust the terribly corrupt racist and include the garbage can guy afterwards for fun, huh? Yeah. You do like another thing later with him.
Absolutely not.
After you do that.
And this isn't the only embarrassing aspect of Farage's victory, because it's traditional for all of the candidates to attend the counting of the ballots. That's a big tradition in British political history. And you stand on stage all together for the declaration, which is why you get those excellent photos of very serious politicians who run the country stood next to people dressed as a giant fox or dressed as a giant badger or as a bin. And yet, when it was time for Farage to be declared, he was nowhere to be seen. And that is the first time that a winning MP didn't attend their own declaration since 1981 and Bobby Sands MP. And he had a good reason not to be there. He was an IRA hunger striker who was in prison at the time that he got elected to MP.
Okay, well, with that many candidates, I think Nigel was just worried about the structural integrity of the stage. Marsh, you got to be careful.
If that is fair. So in fact, it was Count Binface who gave the speech of the night, and he declared himself the outright winner out of the candidates in the room who bothered to turn up, which is statistically true. Although it turned out there was actually another reason that Nigel decided to skip the count with the count. He'd apparently been advised by Essex police about a credible threat to his safety if he attended, which, of course, would be entirely understandable, except no the fuck he hadn't, as the police made it very clear, like the second every single national media company checked with them, there was no such threat and they gave no such advice.
God, fuck. All right, I resign again. Everyone has to vote about whether or not I was lying about the cops thing and my opponent is my left hand in a sock puppet.
So instead, Nigel spent the evening at a private event in Essex with his supporters at an event dubbed Farage Fest, where he told supporters, quote, "I am damned if I'm going to stand on stage having won a resounding victory and be demeaned and humiliated by nobodies." But nobodies, Nigel? Really? How dare you talk that way about a member of the Sigma Nine Recyclon dynasty?
Yeah. Also, I bet the folks at Farage Fest were awesome, Nigel. Yeah. I can't wait to meet them.
Great guys. So the next day, Farage gloated on social media that the resulting Clacton speaks for itself, which might well be true, given that it absolutely doesn't speak for the Parliamentary Standards Committee, whose investigations into his finances resumed a few hours after he was elected. So, yeah, if he's found guilty, he can be suspended from Parliament, which would trigger yet another by-election, as long as 10% of the electorate call for his removal from office. Now, 10% of the eligible voting population of Clacton would be 7,900 people, or 2,000 fewer than those who just voted for a man dressed as a bin. So we're going to mark this one as to be continued.
You can do this. You can do this. And in bricked up news, Ed Mansell was a collector's collector. Starting in 1999, he collected Star Wars Lego sets. Not casually, not a few sets under the Christmas tree, but a near complete catalog of everything ever sold that was Lego Star Wars. 780 sealed sets and 1,200 rare minifigs. At the age of 83, like all great collectors whose family don't give a fuck about their hobby, he decided to turn that collection into something they would care about, money. The store he eventually brought it to for consignment, Bricks and Minifigs, called it, quote, one of the largest, most valuable, privately held Star Wars Lego collections in the world, end quote. And then the franchise changed hands to new Utah-based owners. And when the Mansells went to check on their collection, it was gone. The new owner said that they didn't have it. Bricks and Minifigs Corporate said that the consignment was unauthorized, and so they refused to help. The police were called, but since shooting a black guy wouldn't have done anything, they were no help either.
Yeah, like the new owners at the store just like waved their hands in front of the guy's face. These aren't the toys you're looking for.
Exactly, yeah. But then the impossible happened. A YouTuber helped someone. But not just any YouTuber, my friend. Reckless Ben. He published a video called "I Tracked Down the Thief Who Stole $200,000 of Lego," and that video got 4 million views. But he didn't stop there. He created a fake viral business called We Steal From Old People.
Okay, at which point he was sued for copyright infringement from the church.
It was, yeah, it was. He set up Lego lotteries to prove that the store actually did still have the sets. He even went to franchise owners' houses. When he called out the police for their incompetence and possible participation in the scam, he got arrested at his Airbnb, and the police claimed that he had stolen the Legos himself. He didn't. He fled to Mexico. He came back. It's a whole saga. You should check it out. But none of it actually got Ed's family their money back.
Okay, I'm not saying the police were definitely part of the racket, but the officer that turned up was wearing aviators that were actually just drawn onto his face. He had a big yellow round head, and his police badge was just painted onto his flat chest.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. Side note, Reckless Ben has made it very clear that he believes this whole thing is a giant conspiracy by members of the Mormon church, because the franchise owners, the Bricks and Minifig CEO, and a bunch of the cops involved are devout Mormons. And I'm not going to weigh in on whether or not I think that's true, but if that seems unbelievable to you, you have not spent as much time paying attention to the Mormons as we have. This would be like the fourth most insane thing they've done this year.
Okay, but given that they're all Mormons, have they checked to see if all that Lego isn't just buried in a nearby hill somewhere? You know, maybe get an angel to show them exactly where to dig.
Slippery. It's slippery because of their lack of faith is the problem. Well, this week, we actually got some good news in this case. Bricks and Minifigs and the Mansell family announced a settlement. Now, terms are undisclosed. The joint statement specifies that the resolution is, quote, not an admission of liability, wrongdoing, or unlawful conduct, end quote. And there are still several lawsuits around the case that are ongoing, but the Mansell family is, at least in part, made whole.
Yeah, but in true Lego fashion, they're mostly complete, but there's still some important bits that have just gone missing somewhere along the way. Like, check on the store for something. Yeah.
Exactly. And look, I'm a bit of a collector myself. So, Max, if you're listening at some far off distant date and you're trying to figure out what to do with my magic collection that's worth, I assume, dozens of dollars at that point in history, maybe don't trust the Mormons with it. Even if I've already done my villain turn and become a Mormon by then. I know you and your stepmom are the same age and she seems cool, but don't do it. Okay? Don't do it.
And finally tonight, in Do They Know How Lucky They Are news.
Fantastic!
Britain has all manner of annual traditions that might seem quaint to the rest of the world. At the start of May, some people don bells and dance around a big pole in the middle of the town. At the end of May, people risk their life and broken limb, hurling themselves down a steep hill to catch a wheel of cheese. And in Cumbria, people put a horse collar around their neck and compete to see who could pull the silliest face, with some competition winners even having their teeth removed to make them a more effective gurner.
No, I did this to my teeth on purpose. That's an extremely British excuse, Marsh. And can I say, none of us are buying it in the rest of the world. None of us.
So yeah, there's those. And also, once a year, for at least the last three summers, the country erupts in race riots. It's a less storied tradition, but it's one that's really caught on of late. It's a bit of a trend. The 2024 riots kicked off after the murders in Southport. The spring and summer of 2025 were filled with violence and anti-migrant protests across the country. And then in June of this year, a racist mob went from door to door in Northern Ireland looking for foreigners to attack. As a tradition, I'm not persuaded it's going to develop in the same kind of like family feel as Bonfire Night has. Although, in its defense, it did also involve setting a lot of things on fire in public.
Yeah, we were really hoping you guys could kind of get it out of your system with the World Cup this year. But if anything, that just made you madder. So,
and, you know, speaking of publicly starting fires, we'll come to the latest outbreak of pogromatic violence, which took place in Thetford, Norfolk, where 200 race riders threw rocks and attempted to break into homes that they believed housed asylum seekers. And that led to multiple arrests. And into this febrile atmosphere came the response from the Daily Express in the form of an article titled, quote, "The jaw-dropping list of everything asylum seekers in Thetford were given for free." In that article, they explained that when they visited a migrant house, they found a bin by the front door and it contained a cardboard box and a list of all the possessions that had been handed out by the UK government to asylum seekers.
Wow. Yeah. You thought you wanted to murder people already? Wait till you hear about the free water bottles, guys. You're going to go nuts.
Well, that's it, right? I know what you're thinking. Those pesky asylum seekers, they want to come over here for the easy life where they live on handouts from the state. What was on the list? You might be wondering, was it a free car? Did they get a PlayStation 6 or a PlayStation 7? Was it a council house? Or was it one of the precious few NHS dentist slots that are still available in the country? Well, no. The jaw-dropping list consisted of one duvet, two pillows, two sets of hand towels and bath towels, a dinner plate, a side plate, a bowl, a mug, a set of cutlery, a frying pan, and one solitary toilet roll. Which, you know, with such a life of luxury on offer, you can see why people might cross the desert and hand all of their money to a people smuggler and risk their lives on a cramped rubber dinghy on the open seas and then turn up in a UK filled with people hell-bent on burning them alive in their sleep.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of thought crimes, but if they installed like a failsafe into the human skull where you being mad about another person having a bowl and a frying pan made your brain explode, I do think the world would be a better place, right? Like we would have a better world.
We absolutely would. And look, I get it. The people who live in these communities that where they're turning to violence, they might well be doing so because they feel cut off. You know, that their lives are getting harder as the cost of living escalates, that wages are stagnating. And you know, they might feel that there are politicians who just aren't doing anything about it. And it can feel like they have nothing. But what they do have is access to more than one fucking dinner plate.
Yeah. Also, a lot of people are poor without being murderous racists. So I don't know. Get a hobby. Try puzzles or something.
Yeah. So the solution to all this isn't to go after people who have to feed and clothe themselves on a stipend of £7 a day, who are legally not allowed to seek work, who are fleeing persecution and war and even torture in their home countries.
Yeah, also, side note, you're wasting your gasoline and matches. Your whole thing is that you were running out of those last winter. You were so mad about it. Now you're wasting them.
Yeah. So if the people of Thetford or Belfast or Rotherham or Southsea or any other part of the country that's rioted against immigrants over the last few years, if they feel like the system is rigged against them, and if they're angry about that, maybe they should direct their anger at the people who caused that. And spoiler alert, it's not the people whose earthly possessions can fit into a fucking cardboard box.
That's right. It's trans people. Sorry, I'm still reading the Quillette and it's won me over. It's won me over. What can I say? And on that note, we're going to close it out.
Okay. And apparently I'm no longer horse now. It's 1776 all over again.
Of revolution! I watched Young Washington last weekend. It got me all fucking psyched. Thanks to Michael Marshall, my co-host, my little assistant, if you will, my cheeky little sex symbol. And thanks to all the listeners who liked us and followed us on all the various internets. Please keep doing that. Please keep listening. And please keep telling your friends. And if you find the naive stupidity of us giving away a free show business model to be oddly charming, you can give us gifts of money at patreon.com/skeptocrat, just like the many fine patrons who will be thanked upon Heath's return. And whether or not you're feeling financially benevolent like those young people, you can enjoy our brand of wisdom and you'd like to make more dick jokes free of charge. I'm having a stroke. Help me. Check out our brother and sister shows, The Scathing Atheist, God Awful Movies, D&D Minus, and Citation Needed, available in all the podcast places and on YouTube now. We're on YouTube. I mean, you might be watching this on YouTube.
This is YouTube. Hi,
but
YouTube.
But you can see it and hear it, and it's all those places.
There's a button or something. You press a button, it's like a bell or something like that. I hear
you press
a
button,
the kids talk about
and
it.
Then you've got a YouTube. Smash it! You gotta tell them to smash it. That's what your sex
it has to be smashed.
You gotta tell them to smash it.
Is there an amount of force by which you need to, like, if you tap the bell, does it
you're
not, like, register?
You're the sex symbol, you tell me the force. I don't know. That's why we called you in. We have just one last thing. Let's compliment that penis. Special thanks to Ryan Slotnick of Evil Giraffes on Mars. He's the creator of the virtuosic musical stylings you heard today, which were used with his permission. You should definitely check him out by using the links we'll provide or by Googling the only band called Evil Giraffes on Mars. Until next time, catchphrase sign off.
The preceding podcast was a production of Puzzle and a Thunderstorm LLC, copyright 2026, all rights reserved.
Stop the podcast!
Stop the podcast!
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids, some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.